From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 568, Office 365 Hubs for Teamwork, with guest Tony Redmond, recorded Wednesday, December 13th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, bringing back one of my favorite guests today, Tony Redmond, who works as a principal of his own consulting company, Tony Redmond & Associates, helping companies to figure out technology strategy or accomplish specific goals. And apart from his experience gained over 27 years in digital, compact, and HP, Ted is a vice president, Tony remains a practicing technologist and is a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional for Exchange Server.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Exchange Server. Remember those good old days?
Yeah, I remember Exchange. Yeah, Exchange has been going an awful long time. It's 21 years now.
Yeah, it's a long time.
When you think about software products, that's extraordinarily long time.
Yeah. No, it's generations and generations. And dominating its space, too. Like, a very successful product.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. But the really interesting thing now, I find, is that the Microsoft guys really are struggling to find new functionality to add to Exchange. I mean, they're tweaking at the margins. There's no really big new functionality that you can really add to an email server that's been around for 21 years. And that probably is also reflective of the new role that Exchange finds itself in. I mean, I think it's quite interesting when you look at Office 365, you look at the cloud, how the cloud has affected these things. Both SharePoint and Exchange, instead of being the center of their own universe, which they were for years and years and years in the on-premises space, are now just basic providers of functionality to other applications. And it's quite a change. And it's actually a cultural change for many people who work with these applications. You know, as I say, instead of being the center of the universe, they're now just another application.
Sure.
It's providing a service to other applications.
Well, and other than moving to the cloud a few years ago, and clearly that's the sort of dominant product these days, even in there, you see that the Office 365 suite, the Word, Excel, and so forth, you don't see a lot of innovation there. It's all the little things around it. It's the delves and the groups and the teams and all of those kinds of tools where you see new value being brought to the table.
Yeah, I think what you see there is the realization of this thing, this concept that people like Satya Nadella have been talking about, where Office 365 is just a big software toolbox.
Right.
I mean, people often ask me, what's the difference between Office 365 and on-prem applications? Because they're normally on-prem customers. They're wondering, will they ever see some of these technologies come through? And I think there are a couple of characteristics of Office 365 that capture the difference between it and on-premise apps. One difference clearly is scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think of Exchange Online, 150,000 mailbox servers, that's an incredible scale that you're never going to even dream about on-prem. So the scale gives you an incredible power, and that power you see in some of the features that they've got, like content searches. You know, if you do a search of 100,000 mailboxes on-premises, it's going to take you hours and hours and hours. Whereas on Office 365, it's going to take you 10 minutes.
Right.
And that's simply by being able to decompose the work and spread it over all available servers. And then you get this thing called a fabric. And what that really means is that because Microsoft, they develop the code, they deploy the code, they operate the code, they know how this code is interlinked. They know that, for example, that SharePoint and Exchange are always going to be present. They're
sure.
The basic workloads. They're always going to be connected. They always work well together in the cloud, which is not something you can always say inside an on-premises environment.
Mm-hmm.
And because that fabric exists, it means that you can then build off that fabric. You can build new applications. So if you look at Teams, a very, very big application for Microsoft, and a big, big point that the Teams developers made at the recent Ignite conference was that they deliberately did not reinvent the wheel. They just picked functionality up as much as they could, and then they concentrated on the stuff that they couldn't find elsewhere. So they picked up a mailbox from Exchange, a document library from SharePoint. And I think that's a perfect example of how these super powerful and super important applications on-premises have become just providers in the cloud. And then the last thing is that I think that hugely different is what you might call intelligence, which is represented by the graph.
Right.
So because all these signals are being accumulated about what users are doing, what they're sharing, who they're emailing, who they're having meetings with, how they're communicating with people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Microsoft is then able to build new applications like Delve, or build functionality like the focused inbox, or indeed incorporate elements of AI in their application. So if you go and, for example, browse for a new team, Teams will suggest ideas to you based on the people it knows, or the graph knows, you've been sharing information with, and you do it on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're members of another team that you're not a member of, it'll say, hey, you should join this team. So those characteristics of scale, interconnectivity, fabric, and intelligence, I think, are the real differences between on-premises applications and what we see now in the cloud. And they're things you will never, ever see on-premises.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I also think it's somewhat confusing to sort out all these different options. Exchange had grown into that sort of universal communicator that also had the messenger and sort of presence indicators and things. But then when you switch over to Office 365, you've got groups and teams, and as much as they say they're trying to keep it, you know, narrow and focused, they do seem to overlap a fair bit.
They do. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you could throw public folders in there if sure. you really wanted to go back to the last millennium.
Yeah, yeah. And OneDrive for business.
Oh, yeah. If you start to interpret what Microsoft said, I mean, you know, Microsoft is a great company for coming up with marketing catchphrases. You have to look behind the catchphrases. But a really important one that they've been using for quite a while now is this concentration, what they're calling two hubs for teamwork within Office 365. One of them is Teams and the other is Outlook. And really, and I don't want to be ageist or whatever, but I you might say that Outlook is for folks that have organized their work life around Outlook for the last 20 years since Outlook 97 appeared, who are very comfortable with email, who are probably quite structured because they have folders, they know how to organize email, they know how to organize meetings, they right. do it all through Outlook. And then on the other side, you've got folks who may be coming from a different kind of, a different generation maybe. And you know, you sometimes hear Teams being described as the new Outlook. And what they're really saying there, I think, is that, well, you know, if you sat down in 1996 and built an application which captured Office applications as we knew them then, you'd get something like Outlook. In the same way, if you sat down today and built an application which captured the ways people communicate, it would all be about voice and video and chat. And that's exactly what you see inside Teams with the add-on bits of things like SharePoint and Planner and the tabs and the bots and all this kind of stuff. So it's not altogether unsurprising to see Microsoft concentrating on their strengths and say, you know what, we recognize there are different ways people work. And what we've got in Office 365 are two very distinct hubs for teamwork.
Right.
Use whichever one makes sense to you. But the good thing is that they're all powered beneath the surface by a common set of services. You go back in Exchange, SharePoint, and then other stuff like compliance, like e-discovery. You know, these other very important services are all there and they're working on a common cross-workload basis. So yeah, you could criticize them for having these multiple choices. But I think when you strip it back, you say there are really only two choices for collaboration now. Inside Office 365. Well, you could throw in Yammer as well, I suppose, but Yammer is its best days are probably gone, and yeah. it's really suited for different kind of things. But if you're talking about Teams, and Teams you define as being up to 2,500 people, then you're either going to organize your work around Outlook, or you're going to organize your work around Teams, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, that seems to me, you hit it on the head, that the legacy approach, the one that you and I certainly have been immersed in, has been collaboration via email. And there is a newer generation approach that's a collaboration around chat.
Yes.
And that these are the two product stacks. And they do intersect, but they just allow for the fact that there are different people who perceive this in different ways.
Yeah. And I've seen that a lot now. And over the last couple of months, I've been really trying to use Teams on the basis that I want to understand this technology. I want to understand what makes it tick, what the strengths and weaknesses are. And it's interesting. I mean, I've heard, you know, after Ignite, because of course, Teams at Ignite was its coming out party,
sure.
if you want. It was the first major conference Microsoft had run where they could talk really about Teams as a shipping application. And I was amused by some of the commentary that happened after Ignite, where people were pontificating from a height saying Teams is going to replace email. And of course, that's absolute BS. of the highest order. Teams does not replace email. Email has got a depth of functionality and a breadth of functionality that Teams can't even think about. But what Teams brings to the party is the ability to offload some of the overhead that we see inside mailboxes into a more appropriate forum.
Sure.
I mean, if you look at the kind of messages that often bounce back and forward between people as you try and get something going, there's a lot of overhead in email.
Yeah, bad emails, right? These are bad emails that, what about Tuesday? No, I need Thursday. I'm like, those are bad emails.
Yeah. And when you think about it, all the crap that goes along with it, like, you know, the message head and the auto signatures and stuff like that.
Right. The ceremony.
Can we stop sharing the corporate logo with each other? I know what company you work for.
Yeah.
Yes, that's terrible. But inside Teams is much cleaner when you're communicating in that kind of thread-driven conversation mode.
Sure.
You get a much cleaner conversation. It's much easier to find things. But on the other side, that situation only remains like that if everybody obeys a common set of rules. You know, it's kind of like etiquette. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you find people replying to an existing thread by creating a new thread, that's not very helpful because you end up with this chaotic mess of threads all over the place. Yeah. If you find that people don't start off new threads with a subject, which helps to, you know, call out what we're going to discuss, then you end up with disorganized as well. So, in other words, it is as easy to make a mess of Teams as it is to make a mess of your inbox. And sure. One thing we know from 35 odd years of email is that users are extremely good about making a mess of their inboxes. So I see no reason to say that if we look at Teams in maybe another year's time, when we got really, really a broad set of experience in lots of different companies and lots of different situations around the world, we'll find the same set of bad habits, the same inconsistencies, the same problems. But, you know, you can only find these things out if you use the product on a day-to-day basis, which is what I'm trying to do right now. And I definitely think if you have, and again, you know, with any collaboration, we've always known that if you don't have clear objectives and clear support and obvious support from senior leaders within a company, people won't use this kind of things. But, you know, in some of the companies I've been working in, we've set out to replace a lot of internal mail with Teams, and we've set out to really use Teams as the fulcrum for communication and working at that team level, that small work group level. And yeah, it does have a significant impact on email. You find that a lot of those short, snappy conversations are gone, which is great. I mean, people will still go back. They will revert to habit and they will use email when perhaps they should use Teams. But, you know, you can move a lot of that traffic there. And that's what I think is going to happen. Email is going to stay for the more formal communication. It's going to stay for the outbound communication because, remember, Teams is totally inward facing, really, at the moment. It admits guest users into the walled garden, but essentially they come into the walled garden and they stay in that walled garden. There is no outbound communication. Teams doesn't have the notion of things like encryption. It doesn't have the notion of being able to protect information. That's okay because you're inside a walled garden. But whereas again, email now, and especially with some of the recent changes that Microsoft have made, it's so easy to protect email. So that if a message gets to people that it shouldn't, they won't be able to access it. So there are lots of ways that you'll find that email is the right mode of communication. And there are lots of ways where you're going to find, something like a quick chat in Teams is the right way of doing it. And of course, over the next years, we see Teams gradually replacing the Skype for Business online client. We'll see more and more people pick it up and use it for where they've been using Skype IM conversations. So it's going to get progress. But again, I come back to the same point. We will end up with two hubs for Teamworks. People will still be in Outlook and people will be in Teams. And hopefully they'll be using both intelligently, though I can't guarantee that.
Yeah, totally makes sense to me, Tony. And hey, give me one moment here to pay the bills. This episode of Run As is brought to you by SQL Intersection. 8 full-day workshops and over 40 technology-focused sessions make SQL Intersection a unique source of the best information around SQL Server from real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team. You'll learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as learn about the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, cloud, as well as new features in SQL Server 2016 and 2017. It's time to determine your migration strategy, and SQL Intersection is the place to figure out the best way to do it. Come to SQL Intersection at the Swan Hotel in Orlando, March 25th to 28th. Use code RUNAS to get your discount on your registration at sequelintersection.com, and we'll see you there. And we're back. You're listening to Richard Campbell. This is Run As Radio, talking to Tony Redmond about the evolution of Office 365 and this whole idea of teamwork. And I really appreciate the thinking around, you know, collaboration isn't a product. It's a characteristic of an array of products in this space. And that sometimes I also appreciate Teams being the inward, informal conversation vehicle. And then email could be somewhat of a more formal conversation vehicle going outside, especially when it comes to document management, because you're right, the new rights management tools around your documents sent out via email, they're really robust. Like, that stuff works today.
Oh, yeah. So here's the thing, and this might be a little bit controversial. I reckon that Teams and Groups saved SharePoint.
Huh, interesting. Teams and Groups saved SharePoint.
Yeah, let me tell you the reason why I say that. You know, I was listening to Jeff Tepper, who, of course, is the father of SharePoint, talk at the European SharePoint Conference in Dublin last month. And he was talking about the number of people using SharePoint has grown dramatically. And there's an awful lot of those people that are in the cloud, and that's fine and all the rest of it. But as I started to think about the numbers in my head, I said, gee, if 60% of the world's SharePoint population, which is about 200 million, are in the cloud, that's 120 million SharePoint users. So he's basically saying that every single Office 365 user is a SharePoint user. Now, believe you me, the people who went to Office 365 to migrate away from their on-premise mailboxes didn't go there with the idea of using SharePoint.
Right.
But coming back to what we said before, because these two workloads have become providers to the apps like Office 365 Groups and Teams, people, as they start using Groups and start using Teams, they automatically start using SharePoint.
Right.
And that's where the usage is growing. It is through, I mean, if you just think again, there's 125,000 organizations using Teams today. That mm-hmm. was a figure of last month, maybe 150,000. Whichever figure you take, it's still a lot of organizations are using Teams. They're all using SharePoint. So that's where the growth is. It's not really the classic type of SharePoint where people are going in and saying, well, we use SharePoint for document management.
Right.
What they're using, they are using SharePoint for document management, but they're using it in a much more natural way. They're using it, you know, through the files functionality of Teams. Are they using it to share stuff through their own OneDrive sites? You know, and I really think that the advent of Groups, and I'll put Teams in that bucket as well, it's given SharePoint the rocket fuel that SharePoint growth is using right now.
Now, I think folks are confused about what the role of Groups versus Teams is. Like, isn't Groups just a subset of what Teams is now doing?
Well, you've got to go back to the past, I think, to understand this. And I think Microsoft invented Groups as a way of solving some problems in the Exchange space. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were trying to solve a problem of what to do with public folders. We needed some better way. What to do about site mailboxes, because they didn't work either. Mm-hmm. And also, they wanted to get people off distribution groups because they thought they could do a better job. So that's really where the focus of Groups was way back in November 2014 when Microsoft launched them. But gradually, as time went by, you started to see other apps looking at Groups and saying, hey, you know, I could use the Groups membership model, which is really simple. It only breaks down into owners and members.
Right.
In fact, it could be too simple. It is too simple for some applications, but for other applications, this is wonderful because it's just like using a security group, but you've got that extra refinement of you have that differentiation between owners and members. Mm-hmm. So Power BI was the first app to pick up Groups and start using Groups for controlling membership. Dynamics 365 came along. And then gradually over the while, we've seen these other applications pick it up, even things like StaffUp and Stream are picking up Office 365 Groups. So gradually, Microsoft saw that they had this real big success in terms of Groups being used as an identity and membership service.
Okay.
And they also saw that they had this thing called Teams coming along, which was picking up Groups as its identity and membership service. But, you know, you were going to have this conflict about what kind of collaboration platform to pick. Mm-hmm. So again, I come back, there are two hubs for teamwork. Both of them, both Outlook Groups and Teams, use the same membership service. So no matter what style you want to use, you're back using the same set of services.
Right.
Now, there's all sorts of finessing and all the rest of it. Microsoft has got some whiz-bang wallops ways of presenting it. You know, they talk about inner loops and outer loops. Who's your inner loop? Who's my inner loop today? I should be using Teams. Who's my outer loop? And then there's email and all the rest of it. Some of that stuff is just not... I can't get my heads around it. I guess it's worthwhile because it explains how things work in a very digestible way to some people, but I don't really get it. But I what I do get is that we have Office 365 groups is both an application, which is Outlook groups or OWA groups or whatever, and it is this membership and identity service, which is then picked up by other applications. The biggest example of those applications are Teams. Afterwards, you got Planner, Stream, Staff Hub, Power BI, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's good news, but they confuse the hell out of people.
But I mean, I like your explanations that groups is just a kinder way for us to manage assemblages of users so that you can communicate with them as a whole, whether that be via an email, via an identity under Power BI, or via a team channel.
Yep. That's, I mean, when you strip things back, groups is a very, very powerful way of allowing applications to pick up an identity and membership service without having to create a wheel. And gosh knows, in IT, we're very good at creating wheels. So in this case, Microsoft has done a nice job of eliminating a lot of wheels. Now, the downside of it, of course, is that, and you see this in SharePoint. SharePoint now allows you to connect an Office 365 group to a team site.
Okay.
Which seems like a good idea, and I think it is a good idea. But then the people who have been using SharePoint in its classic mode, let's call it like that, for years and years and years, for highly sophisticated document management and that kind of stuff, they run into the lack of granularity that you've got with the group's membership model just having owners and members, and everybody having the same level of access.
Right.
That's actually quite an issue. And the issue becomes even bigger when you've got this thing of guest users coming in, because the guest users, people outside your organization who you may want to give access to a group or to a team, also share exactly the same level of access to all of the group resources.
That's a long way in.
So you get this kind of situation where, okay, I'm going to invite John Doe or Jane Doe into this from the outside. They're a consultant. They're working for me. It's all very good. But they have access to every single piece of data within that group. And they could conceivably go, for example, and delete every single document that's in the document libraries for that group.
Sure, they could.
They could, because you know what? They're a member. They've got the right.
Does this just speak to a roadmap for groups going forward that it needs to get more granular?
Do they? Do they really need to get more granular? Because there is a case that you could make to say, well, you use groups where you can take advantage of groups. Right? Where something like that identity model doesn't really matter, where it's totally appropriate. You might have to work around things from time to time. For example, if you say to yourself, well, okay, I want to have a team or a group that's going to host some external members, but I'm not sure I want to give those people access to everything I have that the other members share.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what? I might need to put up a separate group. And in that group, I put the information, which is purposely designed to be shared with external people.
Mm-hmm.
And I can work it like that. Now, it's a pain because I've got two groups. But, you know, unlike the on-premises world where you start worrying about all your disk space and all the rest of it, hey, we're in the cloud and it's expandable. So who cares?
Yeah, that's fair. And it's good to create systems that tend to have people fall into the sort of pit of success, that the easiest path is the actual safe one.
Yep.
I think that's one of the challenges we run into, is that we're not picking very safe paths.
Yes, that's true. Sometimes we make inappropriate choices. I wish every choice I had ever made in IT was appropriate. I don't think I would be arrogant enough to represent that to you. I think over the last 35 years, I've certainly had a few howlers.
Yeah. Hey, you know, this is what experience really teaches, is to be kind, because everybody has an event. Everything, you know, no one is perfect at all times.
Oh, yeah. I'm a very good example of the imperfection, yeah.
No, we've got imperfection nailed, I think.
Yeah. I've worked very hard at getting imperfection done right.
But it's, you know, just part of the process, sort of understanding the scope of the challenges that we work in. And I guess this is why you also end up leading a lot of things, because you do have, I can't tell you how often I say it. It's just like, that's fine. That's normal. These things happen. Like that response rather than outrage or disdain for anyone doing something incredibly mortal, like making a mistake.
Yeah. Well, I think when we make mistakes, you do clock up that experience, and that experience then allows you to have a look at these new apps and these new ways of working and say, okay, I can see the strengths. Now I can see some weaknesses. And I guess the important thing is to not allow ourselves to become so depressed, if you will, by the perceived weaknesses that you see, that you you really try and understand how to minimize the weaknesses by optimizing the functionality that is available.
Right.
And I am trying awfully hard to do that with teams, but, you know, boy, as you get older, it gets harder to keep up to date with all the stuff that's happening. It really does. It's just an ongoing challenge.
Yeah, I do think we're also embracing the fact that we're not the principal customer anymore. You can even question if we ever were. You know, that just, you know, folks move on, people are different.
Yeah, people are very, very, very different. And yeah, but, you know, we wouldn't do it if we didn't like it, and we like it, so we do it.
No, and I am fascinated by the changes that are happening and the opportunities that those things present, and always keen to dig in and say, well, how are we rationalizing all this? There's clearly a plan. Like, I do feel like Microsoft is learning and getting better, and that this set of tools are definitely improving. I think about discussions you and I had years ago on this show about document management via email, that they really have created this pit of success for us in this new set of tools. So it's actually pretty darn hard to use your email server as a file system anymore.
Yes, please don't use your email system as a file server. That would be a bad thing. In fact, let's please get off all of those old horrible Windows file servers. Can we do that as soon as possible? No, I'm serious. Yeah. I mean, anybody who's using the old-fashioned ways of storing information on file servers, especially if they're doing it in the cloud, which of course means that they've got a hybrid environment because you don't have file servers in the cloud. But, you know, if you have got those on-prem file servers, it's just, let's get them all into the cloud and let's put them in places where they're more secure, they're more easily accessible by things like mobile apps, where they can be protected with the advanced technology like Azure Information Protection, where they can be found by content searches and e-discovery searches, where they can be on hold, where they can have retention policies applied to them, all the stuff that the people who built file servers never even dreamed about, because, you know, that's not the kind of stuff we were doing in 1991 or thereabouts. That is a huge opportunity, I think, for anybody who is moving to Office 365. They have that chance to go and completely revitalize what they've been doing and how they have been storing information. And that is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, no, that we could start thinking about our files as project-based or customer-based, or, you know, much more useful constructs than just files and folders.
Yeah, exactly. We're starting to think about them as corporate assets that need to be protected the right way. So yeah, there's a lot of challenges out there, but this is one of the ones that I think that people should be seizing and going for. But let's please stop using email as a file server.
We'll start with that, Tony. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, again, some of the new applications, I'll just make the point, again, go back to why SharePoint is getting the kicker. It's because the new applications make sharing documents and storing documents so much more easy than it was in the past. You can put them in the right place. You put them in the right place because it seems like the logical place to put them. And, you know, they're automatically indexed, all that stuff like DLP and AIP, and everything just happens automatically. It's great.
Awesome. So, Tony, what's next for you? Where can we, you got an event coming up. Where can we see you?
Events, well, it's the down season at the moment, sure. So there's no real events coming up. I'll be looking forward to doing some stuff in 2018. I guess I'll be at the normal things like Ignite, etc.
Yep.
I'll just keep plugging away. I have my column to write in petri.com twice a week, so I keep busy enough on that. And then we've got the Office 365 book, which we keep updating it every week to make sure that we keep on top of this kind of stuff. And, you know, and I think the important thing, though, when you're talking about books, it's not just technical information that you have to keep on top of. It's also the information about how people are actually using the products, using the technology. Right. Because they are so new, we get new insights all the time. So it's tough to keep things updated like on a weekly basis, but that's the game you've got to play in the cloud.
Remember when we used to complain about having to refresh a book every 18 months?
Yeah, I do. And I also remember going through extraordinarily long publishing cycles.
Yes.
I mean, Microsoft Press, to give them their due, they were one of the first publishing companies to really look at how quickly they could get a printed book out and to try and figure out how they could take time out of the copy editing, layout and all that sort of stuff, those cycles. And they did a good job. And the last exchange book I did with them, they got it down to about 6 or 7 weeks from the final manuscript to printed books being on shelves. But in the world of the cloud, even 6 or 7 weeks,
yeah.
I mean, so much can happen.
Yeah, so fast now.
I mean, Microsoft talks about 350 changes a year inside Office 365. That's almost one a day. So in that 7 weeks, you could have 40 changes. Not all of them are going to apply to your tenant. Not all of them are going to be important. But you probably have 20 of them that you're going to have a little bit of interest in, and maybe 2 or 3 that are really important. So
for sure,
it's just really difficult in the world of the printed book now. It's also difficult, though, on blogs, even again, the online stuff. Because you think about a couple of years ago, you could write a blog and you'd be happy enough. You'd say that this material is probably going to be valuable for 6 months, 8 months.
Right.
And now, I mean, a blog is like, you know, visitors. Yeah. Are dead fish after 3 days is start to smell.
Well, and now you want it to go away because it's just wrong.
Yeah.
Because stuff has changed that much.
Yeah. I mean, we live in a different world, and there's no doubt about it. The world of technical publishing, the world of information, of sharing information, is so completely different now than it was even a few short years ago. I mean, even your shows, if you think about it, if we were to play back some of the conversations we'd had in the recent past, you know, so now we're not talking about 10 years ago.
Nope.
Well, in the recent past, when we talk about stuff, you'd probably wince with some of the observations that you thought were spot on and accurate.
Wise at the time, but times do change.
That's just the way it is.
I mean, absolutely.
That's the world we live in.
Love it.
That's the world we live in. And it's not going to get any different.
No, we're going up the hockey stick, not down.
That's for sure. Yeah. That is absolutely for sure.
Tony Redmond, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Thanks, Richard. Always good talking to you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.